702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
17 minutes after 11 o'clock, it is, of course, Family Matters, and joined in studio by Stephanie Dawson-Kosser, who's a relationship coach. And this week, speaking about community and bringing up children. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, Gooks. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
So today we're going to look at this African proverb that we have heard for generations about it taking a village to raise a child, and really to interrogate what does that mean in the 21st century, now in 2017, and what is village and what is community?
Because if I think of my upbringing, there were always many moms, many grands, many uncles, and I always knew that there was someone watching. Mm. So there was always someone who knew my mother, someone who knew my grand, someone who knew my family, there was always watching. And to this day, there's kind of a league of moms and aunts and uncles who are, you know, some of them tune in. If they hear something funny, they, you know, just check with my mom. Do you know your daughter's doing A, B, and C? Yeah. So there's always been this, you know, a group of people that I was accountable to. But not just that, but I knew had my back or were looking out for me. Or if I was kind of doing the wrong thing, someone would go, hey, come back this way. And I imagine, is that not still a part of how kids are brought up, that there's a group of people looking after you and looking out for you?
Well, I think we long for that. And I think we're wired, we're hardwired to, for that sense of belonging. Mm. We seek it. The question is, do we have it? Mm. And when we look at the social strata of broken relationships, whether marriage took place or didn't, the number of children that are raised in single-parent homes, and the breakdown of extended family by urbanization primarily, not just in this country but around the world, the sense of belonging and that sense of who is watching out for us, who cares, who even knows about us, is certainly has been diminished. So even from my generation to your generation and the generation that's growing up now, society has changed fundamentally. Mm. And it's in the sense of we have become very much a nuclear family who we live with. Mm. And living behind closed doors,
high walls
and in the urban areas. And even where we live in tight physical community of each other in our locations, there's still a sense of what is in behind my door stays inside my door. Mm. And people are not necessarily looking and even concerned about what's happening in the next door shack or in the next block. We are stretched to, from financial perspectives, social, relational perspectives, across the board in so many different directions that it's heavy enough to carry my immediate concerns.
Without having the capacity, be it financial, emotional, otherwise, to worry
to
about.
To be concerned about our neighbors.
Yeah. Although, and there was this interesting, I can't remember which piece I read, but it was saying, you know, if we can make a society that's safe and accessible for children, we'll begin to have the kind of society many of us imagine. So when we think of safe societies, open societies, just societies, if we were to build them around kids and make them and use that as a measure, that we'd begin to see very different society. So it's almost for our benefit as well as adults, as perhaps even people who might you have their own families. If other families are safe, our family is going to be safe too. If my child can play in the street, or if so-and-so's child can play, so can mine.
Yes.
It's actually, there's this idea, and I guess it goes back to the idea of being connected. If those kids are safe and up the road, chances are that road's going to be safe for my kids as well.
And I think so highlighting that, a couple of years ago, I facilitated a community building workshop for a Saturday school community. And in that in the Alex Hall, we hosted the children that come to the Saturday school, their caregivers, and any other concerned adult. So we had caregivers, we had gogos, we had tutors, we had volunteers, other concerned people of that geographical community. And what was fascinating as we worked together on what it meant to build community and how to support our children to be the best learners they could be, which mm-hmm. was clearly the role of the Saturday school community, was that parents and children started listening and being able to understand their own children through hearing the voices of other children in groups, in small groups. Mm-hmm. And through that, the parents and the caregivers began to understand that there were people who they were actually connected to. They were living in the same block, but they didn't know each other existed. Mm. And so the outcome of that workshop where we had the conversation around gifts was that we invited people to collect in groups geographically. So we put posters up on the wall of geographical areas in Alex, and then you went to join the people who live in the same neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, as people voiced their needs, there was an offer of help or support. We suddenly had people saying, I can collect your child from school. Mm. I can offer to do homework with your children on Tuesdays and Thursdays when I'm home early. Mm-hmm. And there was suddenly this, wow, we actually use the same toilet block, but we've never seen each other. Mm. Suddenly we've got our children not only come to this Saturday school together, but they actually go to the same school Monday to Friday. Mm. And suddenly we started building community, but it comes out of meeting and having conversations together. And transformation happens through small group conversations. Mm.
So in many ways, for kids to have that with other children, adults need to have that with each other.
Yeah.
So if I know my neighbors, the young people who live in my home are likely to then know those neighbors and the kids in that home.
The ripple effect begins to build a knowing, mm. a getting to know, a neighborliness, and a community.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking family matters and how important a community is in bringing a child, is it still important? And if it is, why is it seems we just can't seem to get it right in contemporary society? What is that about? Is it about time? Is it a security thing? Is it about, you know, families becoming increasingly inward looking? What has happened to the idea of the community and its importance in raising a child? You can call us on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Your SMS is on 31702 and 31567. The issue of time is a big one. So because I guess communities are relationships need time and effort. Time is a big one. The idea that families are feeling rushed, like they don't have time. They barely have time for each other, let alone time for the people around them who may actually turn out to be a resource and actually help you get some of the time back. But there's the sense that there's just not enough time for anything, particularly if you're someone who wakes up really early to get to work, you know, across town, you're spending 3-4 hours traveling. Time becomes a real constraint.
Absolutely. And another zapper of time is when we stay attached to our screens. So it's about prioritizing, and it's about choice, about where we spend time. So as families, you know, there are certain things that families are going to do. They're going to get up, they're going to wash, they're going to eat together, they're going to eat, they need to eat, and they need to get places. So how do we utilize those connecting points? And in fact, the old-fashioned sort of ritual of a family meal, whether that's pap and sauce or, you know, a 5-course meal, it doesn't matter, but are we eating together? Because meals are naturally social times. It's where we share values, just the value of we eat together.
This is family time.
Yes. So the things that we can do together, we're often doing individually. So it's not uncommon in today's lifetime to be having 4 or 5 people in a home under the same roof and all sitting in front of the TV, and what they're being entertained by cuts connection because they're focused on the technology, not on face-to-face time connecting. And how many other times where we could be connecting eyeball to eyeball in conversation about reflecting on your day, sharing the good things, sharing the tough things, resolving issues within the home. We err away to technology, or if there's, you know, if it's a home where there's different bedrooms, people will come in, take their plate of food and go back to their bedroom. So, and if we don't learn, how we learn to socialize in our family of origin is in general what we're going to take out when we create our own families. So this sense of we need to be connected, but what are we actually choosing to do in our family of origin?
For many families, TV is a bonding activity, or watching TV is a bonding activity. So we watch a show together, whatever it is. So it might be the news at 7 or 7.30, whatever telenovela or soapy at 8 o'clock. I know in my family, Generations was quite important. Isidingo was also quite important. So television as a bonding tool, particularly as more and more people, you know, cut down on their going out, eating out, you know, that budget. So spending more time at home. The TV is quite important, certainly for, we know how important TV is in this country. Does that count as kind of active bonding time for watching a show together?
So it depends on how we use it. If we share the experience of watching it and then turn it off and reflect on what we've just watched and discuss what we've just shared, then it's serving a purpose of building community. But often it's just used as a form of escapism. I'm more interested in what's going down in Generations than I am about what my mum and dad did at work, or what my sibling did at sport, or, and I'm battling with a subject at school and I'm not telling my parents that I'm battling, or I've just broken up with my boyfriend or my girlfriend and it feels like a disaster. But we all plug in to watch Generations going through their ups and downs of life and so on, and their social issues. So it's only in the reflection on the activity that are we building the learning and building the connection. So if we just sit and blob out in front of the box, sure, it's great to chill and relax after a tiring day. But it's only building connection if we start relating. And whilst it's a
So how do we feel about what we've seen? What do you think of what you know, what you saw? Especially if it's a particularly difficult or, you know, tricky subject, because often the shows will deal with, you know, societal issues, families about interpersonal relationship, etc. So having a conversation about, so how do you feel about that? What do you think about what we've just seen?
Absolutely. And it's in those reflective dialogues that we start, A, learning and building our own understanding and our own value system, but also it's in the in that connecting that we are building our personal relationships. And the fact that there might be diversity of thinking is helping us to learn how to deal with diversity in our lives, because for sure we're going to experience that outside of the home. And so to welcome diverse thinking and diverse expression.
And I want to touch on that, because part of what needs to, I guess, to do that as well is to recognize children, and particularly in families, there's a hierarchy. So for us to have a conversation and to have that diversity of thinking would need, for some families, a shift in where the kids fit in, or where the opinions and the thoughts and the feelings of kids fit in, which I think, you know, for many families is might be a bit different, because there's a, families can be very hierarchical, very top down, and there needs to be a shift there if we're going to start having conversations. I want to touch on that when we come back.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
It is Family Matters, and it is 25 minutes before midday on Cape Talk and 702. Still joined in studio by my guest this morning, speaking about community and family, Stephanie Dawson Kosa. Am I saying it correctly? Joining me in studio and speaking about why it is important for children to have a community around them, but also what are some of the difficulties in building a community around kids. Jenny Jones on Twitter saying, I agree, safety is a major stumbling block to community-style living. One wants to keep one's children safe from traffic and predators. And I mean, even the idea of, even if you wanted to go see your neighbors or have your children play with your neighbors, where would they go? Mm-hmm. There's also quite a big lack of communal spaces, so safe places for kids to play in. They can't play in the street. I mean, we played in the street for hours, but it was a fairly small kind of residential area on the East Rand, and it was okay. But if you are growing up in, quite a densely populated area or place where there are lots of cars, communal space has also become a big challenge.
Yeah, it's definitely shrinking. And so it's about finding those safe spaces, which might be in schools, in playgrounds. It could be in sport grounds. It could be in neighborhood parks. But I was struck this weekend, we had an outage in our neighborhood. The whole block was out, and it transpired that cables were stolen. And it took the community around us being out of electricity for 36 hours before people started tripping out into the street. And when the electrical people were having to remove the transformer that had been damaged by the thieves, and the crane came and the floodlights came, everybody's out in the street saying, oh, what house number are you at? And where did you come? And we had a power surge and we lost this. And can I help you with that? Suddenly, it takes a crisis to suddenly create community, because you suddenly start crawling out because you need to know. You want to know. Curiosity is, heightened. And so it's about being able to knock on your neighbor. Who are your neighbors? Even if we just know who lives on either side of us, that is starting to build community. So who do we go and get the proverbial cup of sugar from? And who can watch your children if there's a crisis? And knowing, it builds our sense of knowing, it builds our sense of safety if we know who's next door. And that's as courageous as knocking on the next door neighbor's gate.
And I don't know my neighbor. So I live in a complex, and there's a neighbor above me, and the neighbor, so the unit below is empty. And the neighbor on the right, I know them by their habits. The neighbor upstairs is always moving furniture. I never quite know what they're doing in there, but there's always like a rolling sound. And it's in the evening as well. So that's the neighbor upstairs. The neighbor to the right always plays their music a little bit too loudly, but I have no idea who they are. So if something were to happen, or if someone were to say, do you know where Stephanie is? I would have no idea who Stephanie is, actually. Or if they were asked which unit is Googs in, they would have no idea, actually, that I'm the neighbor. And I don't know what habits they know me by. I'm the neighbor that sings too loudly. I don't know. but I don't know their names. I don't know what they do. I've seen them and I say hello, but that's really it. I know more about their weird habits than I do about them.
And that's a beautiful example of how we assume that we know. I mean, your imagination is probably going quite wild about that sound of furniture being moved every evening.
What's going on up there?
And you tell yourself a story, and that's what happens when we live in our heads. And the only way we can know the truth is when we get in a conversation. And when we get in a conversation, we start engaging. When we start engaging, we can build relationship. Through relationship, we build trust. With trust comes safety. And with safety comes community. And so it all starts with who's prepared to have that courageous first conversation.
Knock on the door.
Thabo
in Randburg, good morning.
Hi, Google, how are you?
Well, thank you, Thabo.
Sorry, I just wanted to say, I used to grow up similar to a lot of people, just sitting at 8 o'clock, it's generations time, and 7:30, you watch whatever soap you watch with your parents. And I think if I had to tell my mom that maybe let's reflect on what you watch, you'll think I love my mind, we enjoyed watching TV together. We would joke about what we saw, we were watching it. And we had a very good relationship with my mom and dad. And it was sort of a thing we done every day. We never ever reflected on what we watched. We just watched and laughed, and everybody went to bed after the soapies, and that's all that.
Okay. But there wasn't a discussion about what you'd seen.
No. There was never a discussion. You'd laugh if you saw something funny together, or ask questions if you don't understand something. But we just one of those things, like going to watch a movie, perhaps, with the family. You know, you go, you watch the movie, you laugh, you enjoy it. You might talk about it afterwards, you might not. But it was just, a cultural thing. We always, every day, watched soapies and had dinner. And yeah, that was one of the things that you look forward to in a day. And, yeah, like I said, there was no reflecting, but our relationships were very, very good up until today.
Yeah.
And that was our pastime.
So, Thabo, can I just highlight that what you've reflected into our conversation on radio today is the rituals of a family meal, the rituals of sharing those TV programs together. And the fact that you were laughing about whatever you saw or asking if you didn't understand something, that is part of that reflective conversation I was talking about.
Yeah,
and the ritual of sharing those, you were engaging together about those experiences. So that's exactly what we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that call. That's Thabo in Randburg. Karen in Simonstown, good morning.
Hi, Gooks. The mention of time made me call in because I realized how important it is. And, of course, now you're talking about trust when you talk about issues of your neighbors and what they're doing and families trust each other. That's why I think with Thabo, you all sit around watching something. You don't have to talk about it because there's an inbred trust. So if communities can develop that trust with each other while still respecting distance, but having trust and faith in each other, you know, that's very important. But why I phoned in initially was the movie In Time with Justin Timberlake brought home to me the folk, you know, what we're talking about right now, and it could be something that goes across the board to young people who haven't got time to listen to the explanations because you just watch a movie and you see how important time is because it's running out, and if you don't do what you need to do, you're going to die kind of attitude. So looking at ways, diverse ways of making people recognize how important time is, how important trust is, how important respect is without lecturing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it's born. Ubuntu comes into it. I'm so hopeful because even though you're talking about shacks and people, I feel the communities that are least resourced are often the most likely to succeed because there is a feeling of Ubuntu, and the lack of resources in wealthy communities is often not recognized because the resources that are needed are resources of faith.
Mm.
So I don't know how that comes into it, but I feel supported in my need in the community I'm in because I have people who are giving us time, and that makes a huge difference. So, yeah, that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Karen in Simonstown. We also have Karen in the Strand. Karen, good morning.
I think we're always back-to-back, Karen, Simonstown in the Strand. How are you?
We're well, thank you, Karen.
Good, good. See, well, I just wanted to say, you know, as much as important as children are in my life and everybody else's life, so are people. Mm-hmm. And I moved down here nearly 2 years ago. I have the most caring, conscientious neighbor that she says if to her husband, because she works, he doesn't work. She says, if that front door is not open, because they look back onto my front door, if that front door is not open by 10 o'clock this morning, you will phone the security company and get them to go around and check that she is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how caring is that?
That's beautiful because, I mean, that's real community building.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have a lot of friends down here. My family's in the Cape and my immediate is all in Joburg. Mm-hmm. But since I've been down here, she's the one and only person who's gone out of her way to make me feel at home. We share meals together. We share whatever's together. And, you know, if we're sad, we share every single thing together. And she's just absolutely the love of my life.
Wow. Wow.
I just
That's...
want to say, you know, how grateful I am to have met such nice people. When last year I was taken for a ride by so many people.
Mm-hmm.
This year, you know, things seem to be turning around.
Well,
so
that's wonderful.
I just wanted to mention that. And I think it's very important that, I mean, in Joburg, I had nice neighbors in front of me, but behind me were absolutely horrible, horrible people. I mean, they made me get all my animals removed off my property, apart from my dogs, because he's just a nasty, nasty person.
Sure.
And down here, I mean, okay, I had to remove my cockadoodledoo, but I've still got my ducks and my chicken and the dogs, and nobody complains. Everybody's quite happy. We all just one little happy community and safe.
That's wonderful.
Anyway.
And wonderful that you can appreciate the people that you now have surrounding you.
Mm.
I do. I promise you, you will never, ever, ever find my foot back in Johannesburg because from the crime and everything I went through, I just will not go back.
Mm. You found your place.
I found my space.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
Next month will be my space next to my daddy up there, upstairs there.
Ah, okay.
Thank you very much for your call. That's Karen in,
have
the,
a lovely day.
In the Strand in Cape Town. On SMS, someone saying, my daughter arranged a basement party in the apartment block she lives in Woodstock. Now she knows everyone in the building. That's a nice way to meet
everyone. That's a beautiful way.
So do something small, have everyone come along, introduce themselves, bring the kids, especially the kids. So you know, if you see so-and-so's kid who's not in the right place, or you go, hang on, aren't you meant to be
exactly. And it's about knowing where everybody belongs. Mm. And that's also what's lovely about that, Googs, is that it was an invitation. Mm. The people that showed up could show up because they chose to. Mm. It wasn't a case of an order or an instruction. It was an invitation, which is beautiful, because then the people that come along are the ones who want to be connected.
Mm. Barry in Randburg, good morning.
Folks, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Barry.
Great, thanks for the topic. I just want your guest to respond to the following. We're talking about family matters.
Mm-hmm.
In some, and she commented about schools, commented about parents and community and their involvement, and how she got involved in Alex and the wonderful story. Mm-hmm. I'd like her to comment on the following. In the communities that initially had whites-only schools, and now they are Model C schools, all the white kids are no longer there. It is African. If you want to tell me, and a few other colored and Indians, you'll say blacks, who are now there, but mostly white teachers. Where have the white kids gone to? One. Two, when you talk in Alex, in terms of people around a particular small neighborhood who have never spoken to each other, related to each other, and they've been sharing toilets. Yeah, that's true. But what is the reason? It is because we don't even have time together.
Mm-hmm.
When people during the day are around at home, some of us are not there. We end up at home at night because we live far from our places of work.
Mm.
It is not by choice. Okay? Now, also, secondly, in the same vein, is that to say, today, it's a community that raises a child. That's true for the African. And that's how far I know it. Because we still maintain it. We still go home. We still go to our uncles, our grannies.
Mm-hmm.
And the word called gogo is not the way some other communities use it, including Ubuntu. I find it, for me, it is quite disturbing and hurting when people who do not understand Ubuntu want to explain to us the community living together, Ubuntu, in the manner in which we use it.
Mm.
Why is it that our rural communities have been destroyed the way they have today and they can no longer thrive? Is it our choice? And when I say our, I'm saying to the people who now land, who are no longer have land in those areas, and those areas are no longer self-supporting.
Mm.
Can your guest comment, please?
Sure. Okay, so the first question around the Model C schools in the urban areas, which now are depleted of white students and predominantly children of other races.
Mm.
I mean, it's a process of migration and people choosing where they want to have their children educated. I was part of a organization that worked in education leadership, particularly for the schools of under-resourced schools, so predominantly schools in the city centers and the township areas and locations. And the one thing that became clear for me working with the principals of those schools was that every parent will want the best school, the best education that they perceive is that they can afford for their child. That is the desire of every parent from whatever socioeconomic grouping they belong to. And wherever they manage to improve, as they manage to improve their socioeconomic situation, typically, most parents will then want to directly improve the situation of their children's education. And where have all the white children gone? I haven't got an exclusive answer, but I am very aware that the former Model C schools are open for children that are in the neighborhood and can get to the neighborhood. And therefore, it's a process of choice. And more than that, I'm afraid I'm not in a position to answer, but that's my personal reflection on it. In terms of building that Ubuntu that you refer to, I think there's a sense of anybody that is living in Africa who has a sense of a rural home and a place to go back to, that has a sense of my history. My ancestors have lived on this land, this particular land, for a lengthy period of time. I mean, urbanization is a process of wanting to improve our economic circumstances. And we move naturally, whichever culture we are talking about, whichever country we are living in, it is true that we will move to where the work is. And therefore,
and often it's a push as well. So it's not about perhaps there. So there's the push and pull factor. For a lot of people, it feels it's a push where the opportunities where I'd like to stay, particularly if it's a place I'm familiar with people I know, with my family there, there's a push factor that makes, I think, often quite a difficult decision to move away from your family, in the hopes that even though you're apart, you're able to provide for them in a better way than you could have if you were to stay, particularly if it's, you know, an area that's previously disadvantaged, that's still kind of, you know, still not serviced in the way, resourced in the way that urban areas are. So it's, you know, it's often a very tough decision to make. We'll take a break now and still take some of the other calls on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Your SMSs as well on 31702 and 31567.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
4 minutes before midday, 4 minutes before we wrap up the show and find out what's coming up in the midday report and then have your latest eyewitness news. But on the point of community, Stephanie, schools, you touched on them briefly, saying schools can be a point where communities can be built. But we also know that particularly teachers are under immense pressure in many ways to raise their students. So kids come to school. So whatever issues are playing out at home will invariably play out at school. So we know if kids are hungry at home, they come to school hungry. If there is abuse, if there's violence, if there's any kind of lack, that manifests at school as well. So schools actually often bear the brunt of many issues. And so they become, it's quite important to get what happens at schools right as well.
Absolutely. And so schools are, by default, teachers become another parent role for children. It's another adult who is deemed, hopefully, safe, that and that they can trust. But teachers, as you mentioned, Googs, are under immense pressure. They're no longer in, or rarely in, classes of 20, 25 where they can really get to know each child individually. Particularly in the government schools, they are often teaching 40, 50, 60 children. And then it's more like a head count than actually in being able, I mean, just at a very practical level, being able to really get to know and understand each individual child. But schools are, they are within communities, and they are a touchstone for parents being able to meet and connect around community issues, parenting issues, as well as the education issues. And so schools can be really catalytic in being able to build and impact the immediate community surrounding the school.
And you said SGBs as well, when we're chatting, also become quite important in that role.
Absolutely, because the SGB is the parent body that has decision decision-making powers within the school structure. And so they are the connection, the conduit between the school and the parent community and the community at large. Yeah.
That wraps up our Family Matters for this week. Stephanie, a pleasure chatting to you.